Hello everybody and welcome to the Zelda Universe podcast, the ZU cast as people may call it, or the Zoo cast. My name's Cody Davies, the Dangerous Cody, the Happy Mask Salesman of Zelda Universe. Those are all nicknames that nobody calls me, and I'm here with my co-host.
Hi, my name is Peyton Garrett. I go by Emperor P on the internet, and I am 12 years old. Wait, what?
Hello, baby Peyton.
Cody, we've discussed this. I'm at least 14 years old here.
So, this is Peyton Garrett. This is a very exciting event for him because this is a Majora's Mask-themed episode. And Peyton was born after the release of Majora's Mask. He is very small.
Just because you're like 6'5" does not mean that I am small. I'm the average height for an American citizen. And B, just because I am on the younger side of things does not diminish my knowledge of the game.
Oh, you were born around Diminish, weren't you? The release of Diminish Cap.
yes, everyone's favorite Zelda game, Diminish Cap.
We've got a podcast today, Majora's Mask. You may have heard of it. It's actually the 20-year anniversary of Majora's Mask. So it's not just Peyton who is younger than Majora's Mask. It's actually a lot of people who are currently old enough to drive and to vote, because this game has been around for a while now. We're gonna head over to our first segment. We actually have a few Majora's Mask themed segments for you this time around. We've got Brian Thomas with Brian's long-term relationship with Majora's Mask. Then after that, we've got five oddities in Majora's Mask from Shona. Then, of course, we have the community news from Roman Ann. And a brand new segment from our very own editor, Kelly, about the Happy Mask Salesman. After that, a very special segment, one of my favorite new segments of the show, from special guest Elias Thompson, a fake history of Zelda. So look forward to all of those segments. Enjoy. We are heading over now to Brian.
Hey, listen. It's me, Brian Thomas, and instead of doing my usual list segment, something like my favorite masks in Majora's Mask, I have a fun story to share with you. Or, it's a unique experience with one of the most unique Zelda games of all time. So hey, listen. It's story time. Hot off the heels of one of the greatest games ever created, The Legend of Zelda: Majora's Mask had a lot to live up to. What many considered to be the swan song of the Nintendo 64 just didn't do it for me. Back in 2000, I refused to play a game that looked and felt exactly like Ocarina of Time, the game that truly got me into gaming, but had a time limit? Indulge me, if you will. Imagine putting a time limit on Ocarina of Time. One that did not allow you to explore every inch of Hyrule, not allow you to play as many shooting gallery games as you wanted, or leisurely hunt for heart pieces. This was a Zelda game that I wanted no part of. And I didn't, until about 10 years later. Now I know what you're thinking. It doesn't feel like there's a time limit to the game, but forgive me, I was a dumb 10-year-old. While I was in college, I brought all of my current consoles to campus with me. However, when I was home, I resorted back to playing older consoles like the N64 and GameCube. So with nothing new to play, I started looking around my room to figure out what I was going to do one rainy weekend, and there it was, sitting in my N64 collection. A friend of mine had given me his gold, holographic copy of Majora's Mask because he fell off video games, and he knew that it would find a good home with me. So, I finally decided to give Majora's Mask a try. I spent the majority of that rainy weekend playing the game and familiarizing myself with the world of Termina. Like many before me, I loved the darker aesthetic and the tone of Majora's Mask. I slowly started understanding how my previous actions could change my future ones. It was an extremely clever game mechanic, and even for it being roughly 10 years old, it felt surprisingly fresh. I wasn't thinking, this is an old game. At the time, it felt more like an incredible indie game, which were just becoming prevalent. But while I was enjoying my time with Majora's Mask, I couldn't shake this looming feeling of confusion, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it at the time. Yet, I still continued to play and reached midway through Snowhead Temple during that rainy weekend, and stopped Sunday evening to head back to college. During that entire week, I tried to rationalize why the game made me feel so strange. I had initially thought that it was just a darker, more mature Zelda than my previous experiences. But that wasn't it. I didn't mind the darker tone of Majora's Mask, it was a welcome change to my time with the series. And it wasn't until I went home that following weekend to pick it back up and realize what it was. When I got home and started playing it that second weekend, I picked up my controller and I didn't know where I was or what I was doing. It wasn't that I didn't understand that the moon was plummeting towards Termina or where Snowhead Temple was. It was the fact that I was playing as Link from Ocarina of Time, and the surrounding characters and environments all looked the same, but everything was so vastly different. I had a "we're not in Kansas anymore" moment from The Wizard of Oz, and from that moment on, it felt like Majora's Mask was just a hollow shell of Ocarina of Time. It felt like visiting an old friend, only to find out that they had changed into a completely different person, one that I didn't recognize anymore. It felt like I went to visit my childhood home only to find it completely different but eerily similar. I have played Ocarina of Time too many times to count, and I know that game like the back of my hand. I know where all the secrets are, I know where to go and what to do. But since it used the same art assets as Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask made me feel as if I should know where to go and what to do, but I didn't. I felt confused, and it made me feel downright stupid, even though I knew at the time that I wasn't, and that I was playing a different game. But I just couldn't shake that feeling, so I stopped playing before I ever returned to the Snowhead Temple that second weekend. And it wasn't until the remake of Majora's Mask on the Nintendo 3DS that I decided to venture back into the twisted world of Termina. Once Nintendo announced that Grezzo were remaking Majora's Mask for the Nintendo 3DS, I was determined that I was finally going to play it all the way through. I was there on day one, and I even upgraded my 3DS to the gorgeous limited edition Majora's Mask new 3DS XL, so I was all in. I thought that I would be able to shake that confusing feeling that I had with the original Majora's Mask, but alas, that feeling still lingered, even with the newer look of Grezzo's remake and using the 3DS layout rather than the Nintendo 64 controller. However, I was determined to finally get all the way through Majora's Mask for the first time. Begrudgingly, I continued to fight through that awkward feeling in hopes to find some enjoyment from Termina, and I did, even if it took a little while. I started to enjoy the 3-day cycle and began to know the world a little bit better. I knew what I needed to do each day and when people were going to show up around Clocktown. I loved rediscovering the events that unfolded each day and reaping the rewards from each unique encounter. I became enthralled with finding the masks and using their abilities. The brilliant use of time mechanics still felt extremely modern despite the original coming out 15 years prior. I kept discovering new things that I absolutely fell in love with, all the way up until the very end of the game. After I finally finished Majora's Mask for the first time, I found myself extremely disappointed. Not because the game was over, but because it took me so long to enjoy a wonderfully distinctive game. And who knows, maybe it was a right place, right time state of mind that finally allowed me to get all the way through. Or maybe I finally grew out of the mental block that Ocarina of Time had on me to finally see that Majora's Mask was its own game. But either way, I'm extremely glad that I gave it a fair chance, and now I finally have fond memories of the game. And with that, that's the conclusion of my love-hate relationship with Majora's Mask. And now that I have a much more positive experience with the game, I can fondly look back and laugh at myself because I couldn't get over something that was seemingly so trivial at the time to enjoy one of the most compelling entries in the Legend of Zelda franchise. Now, I wonder if any of you had similar feelings towards Majora's Mask when it first came out. Did you have any issues with the time travel mechanic? Did you have any issues with time limiting? If so, please let me know, and you can reach out to me on Twitter at itsamebt. That's itzamebt. And thanks for listening to Hey, Listen!
Thanks, Brian.
Can you imagine being a dumb 10-year-old and taking two whole weekends to hit Snow Peak Temple? I mean, listen, our Z Youthon crew of a bunch of adults in their 20s and 30s, it's taken us a proud 3 years to make it to Great Bay. I'm just saying, you gotta bump up those numbers, Brian.
Yeah, well, My Oracle of Seasons run that I do for our Twitch channel has taken years, and as soon as I got the shovel, I've never done anything of importance ever again aside from digging holes and then going to Subrosia and digging more holes so that I can do my famous Shovel Percent run.
Yes. How can I forget Shovel Percent? That's why they call you the Dangerous Cody.
Yeah, though I actually did get stuck in Ocarina of Time at one point. You know the part where you're trapped in with Epona because Ingo was like, you'll never escape. I was sort of like, oh.
Well, yeah, I guess we're done here.
I guess I'll never escape. Then I just sort of, you know, stopped for a little while. I was like, oh, I can't get out. It was a sad time. But luckily I figured it out in the end.
And that's why they call you the Magic Cody.
That is why they call me that. So how do you feel about the time limit in Majora's Mask? Has it ever bothered you?
Nah, I could take it or leave it.
Some people have just never been able to, because I've noticed that about some people's discussion about Majora's Mask. They say, like, I tried it, but it's just extremely stressful. You know, they see the timer ticking away and they're like, I'm being tested, like it's exam time or something.
When I was young and stupid, I thought it was similar to what the demo of Luigi's Mansion was going to be, in which literally you only had those 3 days to beat the game. And if you didn't beat the game in those 3 days, it's over. You had to start over again.
For me, I enjoyed the time limit. Not for the sake of the time limit itself, but because of what it let Nintendo do with the 3-day cycle, with the idea that each person has their own schedule through each of the 3 days that's, you know, completely different from each other. And that's something that hasn't really... That took a long time to be able to be re-replicated outside of the conditions of a 3-day cycle. There are some games that I can think of that have done that kind of thing nowadays, but it was really impressive back in the year 2000.
I kind of wish we would get another Zelda game with these very specific schedules. Not just a day-to-day schedule, but, you know, a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday schedule.
We'll see how it goes. They've never really returned to Majora's Mask. I mean, they've had a remake, but they've never really returned to the world of Termina or anything. It's sort of treated as a side story, but that's fine. Every two or three Zeldas is basically a side story that doesn't involve Ganon. But, you know, it was a cool world, so I'm happy to be celebrating it.
So you mentioned Ocarina of Time earlier. How do you think Majora's Mask compares to it nowadays? Do you think it's better or worse?
Look, I've been a Majora's Mask defender. I do. Ocarina of Time was the first Zelda game that I played, and so it does have a lot of importance to me in that respect. But I do think that Majora's Mask just has so many little details that really reward people who dig in to the game, which I think is why it's so popular disproportionately amongst heavy fans of the series. Like, if you ask the filthy casuals, the plebeians, you know, those Facebook people.
Yeah, the Elias Thompsons of the Zelda series, right?
Yeah, like, they'll be like, oh, I like Ocarina of Time, then I like Twilight Princess because it's Ocarina of Time with the good graphics like the Call of Duty.
Is that your Elias Thompson impression?
That's my Facebook commenter's impression, but don't worry, I still... Look, it's a perfectly legitimate viewpoint to have. I think they're both good games. I'm just a little bit jaded as someone who ran the Zelda universe social media pages for years by myself.
Whoa, you run Zelda Universe?
I don't personally run the social media anymore apart from to make some polls that make people fight occasionally. But yeah, I used to. And look, I sort of had that view for a while, being like, oh, the filthy casuals. But, you know, in the end, when you go back to it and you get out of the cycle of hype and unhype and that kind of thing, Ocarina of Time is still a very good game, still holds up. But Majora's Mask, I do just still think it's a game that it's just got so many little secrets, little moments, little oddities, in fact, you might say, Peyton.
Oddities indeed. And speaking of oddities and old people within our little Zelda community, next up is Shona.
Yeah, Shona, to clarify, when we call Shona old, I mean, she is old from the perspective of Peyton, who was born after the release of Majora's Mask, but we mean more specifically that she's old in the Zelda community, as in she had a fan site in the early 2000s of her own before she got involved with Zelda Universe. So she's been in the Zelda fan community for a while. So it's interesting to hear her talk about what it was like when all of that started. So She's got a segment for us about five oddities in Majora's Mask.
You really like mentioning that I was born after Majora's Mask, don't you?
To me, that's the real, like, split in time. If it was my decision, it wouldn't be BC and AD. You know, birth of Jesus, let's not worry about that. What about the birth of Peyton? I think that's the real split in the timeline here on planet Earth.
Oh my god. BP and AP.
Yeah, you know, before Peyton.
I'm okay with this. Can we just change history?
Well, maybe we can go back in time 3 days. Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha. Get it? Because this is a Majora's Mask theme.
Anyway, here's Shona with some more oddities.
Hey Zelda fans, Shona here, and today I can't help but feel a little bit old while I'm thinking about the 20th anniversary of Majora's Mask. You see, I wouldn't be here, speaking on this podcast right now, if I hadn't typed Zelda into a search engine many years ago and discovered the online Zelda community. Back then, there were only 5 Zelda games, and so Majora's Mask was the first Zelda title that I followed while it was still in development. I was so excited to learn that my beloved Ocarina of Time was going to have a sequel, and I devoured news and screenshots from this new game, known back then as Zelda Garden before it was called Majora's Mask. Ever since then, I've eagerly followed the news of every new Zelda game as they've been announced. I loved Ocarina of Time to pieces, and thought it was really cool that the sequel was going to be this parallel world where I'd get to see many of the same faces again, albeit as different characters. I wasn't prepared though for just how different Majora's Mask would turn out to be. Any familiar comforts that I might have been expecting from Ocarina of Time were instantly blown away in the game's opening sequence, when I was forced to play as a Deku scrub in a very strange world. It felt so completely foreign to any of the other Zelda games I'd played too, which, along with Ocarina, were the first two on the NES. However, by the time I'd played through the first 3 days, I went on to really enjoy Majora's Mask, and it's now up there among my favourite Zelda games. It was a game that polarised Zelda fans at the time because it was so different, and to this day remains the most unique entry in the franchise. When I look back on the Zelda community 20 years ago, I remember this fan site called The Odyssey of Hyrule, which launched a spin-off site to cover Majora's Mask called The Oddity of Hyrule. So, in a game that's still considered an oddity in the franchise, I thought it would be fun to go back and look at some of the most odd things about it. Let's start with the moon. It's one of the most iconic symbols of the game besides Majora's Mask itself. If the thought of the friggin' moon crashing into the world wasn't scary enough, this moon has a really creepy face. Its glowing eyes and toothy grimace give it a sense of character, like it is determined to collide with Termina and consume everything at all costs. I wonder, did Termina's moon always have a face, or did it appear when the power of Majora's Mask pulled it out of orbit and set it on its collision course? And the face isn't even the only thing that's weird about it. In the final parts of the game, you have to go inside the moon. From the ground, the moon's landscape appears to be rocky and barren, but when you arrive there, you find yourself standing in a grassy field under a sunny sky. The birds are chirping and it's actually kind of peaceful. And stranger still, there are 5 children hanging out there, some frolicking in the grass. Each child wears a mask. 4 wear the remains of the game's bosses and 1 wears Majora's Mask itself. Talking to the one wearing Majora's Mask initiates the final boss battle, while talking to the others takes Link to some mini-dungeons that are optional to complete the game, but are part of the quest to get the most powerful mask, the Fierce Deity. By this point of the game, you're probably used to seeing a lot of strange things, and you're also used to being under this constant tension that is created by the 3-day cycle. Among that, being in this calm and peaceful field inside the moon seems even more out of place. Let's move on to the supernatural. Ghosts have appeared in Zelda games since the very beginning, and Majora's Mask has quite a few ghostly enemies, like Poes and the Garou. I want to talk about the ones that are simply called ghosts, because they actually behave like aliens. Once a year, they attack Romani Ranch and try to abduct its cows. They appear at night over the barn and will attack all night until either they are successful and get the cows, or the first light of the sun scares them off. The ghosts can be defeated with arrows, and one of Link's quests is to spend the night helping Romani defend the ranch from the ghosts. If they fail, not only are the cows abducted, but Romani too. These Romani cows are prized for their milk, but it's never explained exactly why the ghosts want them or what they do to them. Maybe they just really like milk. If they take Romani, they do send her home, presumably because she's not one of the cows. But before returning her, they erase her memory. But despite this, she's clearly traumatized. Her expression is distressed, and she sits there, grabbing her head in her hands and rocking about. It's pretty upsetting to see, and if you start to imagine what she might have gone through, outright disturbing. While we're on the subject of ghosts and spirits, let's take a look at the undead, specifically the Rededs and Gibdos. They were some of the scariest enemies in Ocarina of Time and made a return in Majora's Mask with similar attacks. A few of the game's masks, such as the Gibdo mask, give you the ability to go near them without being attacked, which is pretty nice. What's bizarre though is that if you wear one of these masks near the Rededs, they start to dance. Apparently, these Rededs were once members of the Icana Castle dance troupe, which is kind of sad to think about, but I've never been able to decide if seeing these monsters dancing makes them more or less terrifying. The Gibdos also have some new behaviour in Majora's Mask. When you first enter Icana Canyon, you'll see a bunch of Gibdos surrounding the music box house. They believe that the people inside are friends, and this is because the man inside, known only as Pamela's father, has been cursed and is turning into a Gibdo. Link is able to help break the curse on him by playing the Song of Healing. Now, I always thought that Gibdos were just Rededs with bandages, because if you attack a Gibdo with fire, its bandages will burn away, revealing a Reded. But in Majora's Mask, there's another difference. While Rededs dance if you wear the Gibdo mask, Gibdos let you talk to them. There's a bunch of them haunting the bottom of a well, guarding doors and only letting Link through the doors if he brings them specific items, such as fish, bombs or potions. Pamela's father, the man who was turning into a Gibdo, was most likely cursed when he went into this well. It makes you think about the other Gibdos. Were they just unfortunate souls who wandered into the wrong place? Now obviously, masks play a key role in the game, both as a gameplay mechanic and as part of the story. Some of the masks have the power to completely transform Link's body. These masks contain the spirits of deceased people and cause Link to experience great physical pain when he transforms. I'm really happy that the game allows you to skip over the transformation cutscene, not just because you'll be transforming dozens of times, but because I didn't have to keep watching Link scream in agony. I feel bad for the little fella because of all the pain he puts up with while he's on his quest to save Termina, yet it's almost easy to forget about. And while it's clear that Majora's Mask itself contains a lot of evil power, we never got to find out exactly who or what Majora actually is. The Happy Mask Salesman says that the mask was once used by an ancient tribe as part of its hexing rituals, but this ancient tribe has long since vanished and no one knows the true nature of the mask's power. So, was Majora some evil being whose spirit is now contained in the mask? Personally, I don't think so, because Skull Kid's body isn't transformed when he wears it. I think Majora's incarnation and Majora's wrath are more likely to be manifestations of the mask's evil power as opposed to representations of what it once was. What I do know is that in the final boss battle, the forms of the mask and the way they behave are pretty crazy. Finally, we need to talk about Tingle. I know, you were probably waiting for it. I mean, if you were going to talk about weird things in the overall Zelda series, you'd probably still bring up Tingle. Majora's Mask is where Tingle originated. If you know him more as the weird dude who dresses funny and sells maps, let me remind you that Tingle is a 35-year-old man who thinks he's a forest fairy. Most of the characters in Majora's Mask have a counterpart in Ocarina of Time, but Tingle is a new creation, and he's actually pretty useful in Majora's Mask. You'll find him in all of the game's regions making maps, which you can buy from him. I thought Tingle was just another quirky resident of Termina, so I was really surprised when he showed up in the Wind Waker. His maps, which were affordable in Majora's Mask, were now much more expensive. And then he showed up and was mentioned in more games, which I didn't understand because I started to find him really annoying. Turns out that he was really popular in Japan, where the games are developed, and since then he's even appeared in a few spin-off games of his own. But going back to Majora's Mask, one other thing that you might have forgotten is that Tingle's dad is in the game too. Dad runs the Swamp Tourist Center and is embarrassed because his 35-year-old son is running around dressed like a fairy and doing silly things like looking for fairies. He tells Link that he thinks it's because he spoiled Tingle too much when he was raising him, but he also mentions that Tingle is really a kind-hearted boy. Note that he said boy and not man. So there you are, five weird things in Majora's Mask, and I didn't even mention the hand in the toilet. What are some of your strangest memories of the game? Share them with us in the comments or get in touch with Zelda Universe on social media. Till next time, farewell, and I sincerely hope that you don't meet with a terrible fate.
Thanks, Shona.
Can we just take a second to talk about just how subpar Ocarina of Time is as a game? Like, let's be honest, it was a good stepping stone, but there are some significantly better games that followed Ocarina of Time, such as Majora's Mask and others. Like,
you're one of them, aren't you? You're one of those Facebook commenters, aren't you? You probably like Twilight Princess. You probably think it's Ocarina of Time, but with the good graphics like Call of Duty, don't you? Admit it.
I will admit half of that. I will admit I believe that Twilight Princess is a better version of Ocarina of Time. Graphics are graphics, I don't care.
Speaking of Majora's Mask, a video game, you may have heard of it. What was your favorite oddity in Majora's Mask?
Well, out of the ones Shona listed, definitely Dancing Reedettes. Reedettes and Gyarados. I always have loved Akana and its whole vibe it gives off. And I love the Dancing Reedettes. It's probably one of my favorite rooms in the entire little temple there.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's obvious at first, but, you know, it's definitely the thing that stands out the most to you when you start the game. The fact that the moon just has a face and it's staring at you, like, that's just, you know, I feel like all of those people who got stressed out when they played Majora's Mask, I can sort of understand it, seeing the looming face just sitting above you waiting to crush you in 3 days. It's definitely an odd but great stylistic choice in the game.
I mean, that's definitely a very rational take on the whole situation, but I could have sworn that Tingle would have been a bigger nightmare.
Look, there's nothing odd about Tingle. Tingle makes sense entirely. There's actually a few good theories about Tingle. Welcome to Tingle Corner, by the way. Welcome to the Tingle Zone, as they call it.
Yep, the Tingle Zone, starring us. This is our new segment for the show.
That's right, the Tingle Zone with Cody and Payton. So let me tell you about Tingle. Tingle, I'm not sure if you've heard this theory before, but each character in Majora's Mask is an alternate version of a character in Ocarina of Time. The real reason for that is because they wanted to reuse the assets, but they sort of made it work with the alternate dimension theme in Majora's Mask. But Link does not have a version of himself in Termina. Except there is one. There is a hero, but he just never had time to shine because no crisis ever befell Termina. We're, of course, talking about Tingle, the Link of Majora's Mask.
I don't know. I always saw, honestly, Kaifei as a better Link representation with Anju kind of... If the Kookaloo Lady didn't exist, Anju would be a better representation of, I think, Zelda.
Well, I think, from my perspective, Tingle is Link if it all went wrong.
Yeah, that's about right. the best way to put it.
In an alternate dimension where he just became a shut-in who kept claiming that he was going to be a hero, he's also a representation of the player in that sense. He's a grown adult who wants to run around dressing in green pretending to be a hero, just like the people playing the video game. Even you are now a grown adult, Payden, technically, who goes around playing Zelda games. So you are Tingle now. When you turned 18, you became Tingle.
I'm so excited. Ooh, I've always wanted to be Tingle. My first thing is, I want to figure out why I was able to survive several hundred years and be across several timelines. Is there an explanation there? Why Tingle is around in Wind Waker?
He finally found a fairy, presumably, and then paid it with the power of money.
Whoa, here's some conspiracy stuff. If you die of old age in the Zelda world with a fairy, do you just get revived? Or is it only if you die from, you know, unnatural causes in the Zelda series that you get to use a fairy to heal yourself?
Yeah, see, this has never come up because Link has never died of old age while in the game. But why not? I think that would be an interesting take where it just keeps getting, like, he just keeps gorging on fairies to become younger and younger. Like, each fairy takes a year off its life. And so he has them all trapped in bottles and he's just consuming them year after year for centuries.
I mean, hey, every time you visit a fairy fountain, fresh batch of fairies right there.
So, yeah, if you're a fairy, watch out. Watch out for Tingle. He's going to use you to become immortal.
He is going to consume you for his own benefit.
Yeah, that's a quote from Majora's Mask, isn't it? From Tingle. I will consume everything.
That's the famous Tingle quote. That's the reason he became so famous. Anyways, next up is community news with fellow youth Realm Wings, as well as the Zelda Anne. Take it away, guys.
Hey, Realm. Long time no see.
Oh, hey, and it's really been a while, hasn't it? Oh, well, regardless, we're back.
And ready to report the hottest news from the ZU Forms community.
Finally.
First off, the ZU Forms community currently has a number of great events either beginning or going on right now. After a long hiatus in late 2019 and early 2020, the Zelda Universe tradition of Mafia is continuing its three-game streak with U.S. President's Mafia, run by beloved Form member and Mafia veteran Silver, wherein players will fill the roles of various famous leaders from America's history in order to ruthlessly murder each other. This game is anonymous, meaning players will use alternate accounts on the forms to hide their identities in-game. Something bound to make the game quite an interesting one. While at the time of recording, signups have likely ended. Even if you haven't found your way onto the players list, be sure to tune in and watch the chaos ensue.
Sounds like fun. Next up in events is a currently running Community Central endeavor led by Lady Sunshine to connect ZUers through the mail? That's right. In this age of instant communication, some ZUers are taking a step back to communicate in a more traditional manner for the ZU Letters/Postcards event. In this event, participating members over the age of 16 were paired with each other in order to exchange letters, postcards, or anything else that one can fit through a mail slot. While signups have already closed as of June 6th, by June 20th, participants will have sent out their letters to their partners, and over the following weeks, pictures of these letters will be posted. To find these pictures, a list of members participating, and more information, make sure to check out the event thread in Community Central.
Speaking activities run by Lady Sunshine, currently winding down is the Stay at Home Inspirations community event. In this event, designed to provide a distraction or inspiration during quarantine, participants were tasked every several days with a small project, which could range from writing a journal entry, to finding a new ZU thread to participate in, to just doing something creative. Because of the activity's purpose, this was one of the more relaxed events in recent memory, with no direct obligation for those involved to submit something for every project. Despite this, the response from the community was overwhelmingly positive, with exceptionally high levels of participation. To see the projects and read up more on the event, once again, check out the thread in Community Central.
Finally, on our list of notable events, we come to the often quiet role-playing section, which has returned in full force with a brand new Fire Emblem Three Houses-themed roleplay led by forum user Turbo. In this RP, players take control of OCs, or original characters, and play out a brand new story in the world of the wildly successful strategy title. Relatively unique about it, and arguably somewhat responsible for its success, has been Turbo's scheduled approach to managing roleplay. Unlike most RPs on the site, which are open to additions and posts at all times, the Fire Emblem Roleplay Group meets for scheduled sessions every Saturday, the only time during which participants may continue the story. While the plot has only progressed over the course of four sessions so far, it is already clear that, with strong direction from Turbo and a talented group of roleplayers, this RP will be very interesting. Watch the action in the thread in the Tales of Worlds section, or discuss it all in the Hub thread in Roleplay Discussion.
Now it's that time of the show where we look at some of the threads around the site that have captured the interest of our users. One that has specifically gotten some strong reactions is EcoFert's Termina Erasure Morning Rage thread in General Zelda. Old wounds are being reopened as theorists and fans alike battle over the eternal question within the Zelda theorizing community. Is Termina, the setting of fan-favorite game Majora's Mask, real? Or simply an illusion? Many, like EcoFert, are firmly on the side of it being real, while some are more skeptical, and others yet take positions in the middle of the two. Whatever you think the answer may be, make your voice heard and join the discussion in General Zelda. Personally, I kind of think it's kind of funny this question popped up because yesterday, well, actually more of just this whole entire week, I was playing Majora's Mask Randomizer on my personal stream. And I actually ended up making the statement that I personally think that it is an illusion, where when Skull Kid ended up knocking out Link, that during that whole entire time, he is in a dream state. And that's why so many different characters from Ocarina of Time are in Majora's Mask. So he's kind of dreaming of these different characters that he's, well, ended up talking to. And also, in a way, he's kind of like showing his own emotions through these different kinds of characters. So I thought it was kind of interesting that this question ended up popping up because I literally ended up talking about it just a few days ago. But what do you think about this, Rome?
I actually totally agree. And I think it is an illusion. I think what's interesting about the people who are really adamant that it's not is that their argument is that it's less emotionally meaningful. The events of the game are less emotionally impactful if it's an illusion, which I don't really get. I don't really think that the fact that it didn't necessarily happen in a real sense doesn't mean that the characters and the events that happened weren't meaningful. So it's, I agree with you that it's an illusion, and I feel like it matters less than a lot of people feel like it does.
That is definitely an interesting way to put it, to be honest. I never really thought of it that way. I'm definitely on the side of, like, it has such an emotional impact with different characters. I'm also empathetic, so I have a lot of empathy for it. And also, I am a little biased because I played this game as a kid like so many times, so I'm definitely connected with it emotionally. So yeah, I could definitely see your point too.
I think it's a lot like the question of if we're all living in a simulation or something, does that mean that nothing matters? And I think no, like the knowledge that maybe we're living in a simulation or something doesn't really change the way we interact with the world in any way, so I wouldn't say that it actually makes it less meaningful. Moving into subjects of more general gaming, get it? The hotly anticipated Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition released on May 29th for Nintendo Switch, and as is often the case for such things, there is a discussion thread to accompany it, this time started by MVM. For discussion of all things Xenoblade DE, make sure to drop by.
And while not exactly new, gaming as a whole is still riding the wave of Animal Crossing New Horizons, which was released in late March, so we thought it was appropriate to mention our dedicated Animal Crossing thread right here on the forums, started by Aurora. For discussion of New Horizons and all things Animal Crossing, setting up meetups in-game or the gaming turnip market, don't miss your opportunity to check it out in general gaming.
Finally, in thread shoutouts, in honor of June being Pride Month, we'd like to call attention to a thread special to a lot of Z-ewers, myself included, being the LGBTQIA+ visibility/chat thread, brand new for 2020, started by Serenity. As you may or may not know, ZU is home to members of all gender identities and sexualities, and this thread is a great place to celebrate that. Whether you fall within the banner of LGBT+, or are an ally looking to learn more, this thread is the place for you. We'll be looking forward to your arrival in the thread in general chit-chat.
Recently in the community, we had a very special occasion, made even more special by a heartwarming community event. This occasion was, of course, the birthday of beloved forum member and general gaming mod Silver, who turned 27. In order to celebrate, Lady Sunshine organized a surprise birthday party with some other community members, an event which was a great success. Hey, happy birthday, Silver!
Yes, happy birthday. On to the goings-on of the creative corner for the past and coming months. First up, as usual, the monthly ZU writing contests are and have been carrying on as usual. For May, the prompt was switched up somewhat, deviating from the usual written prompts to instead be an image which participants would base their pieces off of. This prompt was a photo of old books, watches, and a key, and the contest was won by Thousand Sunny for her piece, A Memoir. This piece and others submitted, as well as the image prompt, can be found in the thread in the creative corner. For June, the prompt is Falling from the Sky, and entries are due by June 27th. As always, more info can be found, once again, in the Creative Corner.
Additionally, there are two new Creative Corner events, one of which is currently underway, and one of which has concluded but may return in the future. This first event is the Creative Corner telephone game, run by Thousand Sunny. In this longer form event, three artists and three writers signed up to create a series of pieces based off of each other. One person would begin with a prompt Thousand Sunny wrote. Off of that prompt, they would have to create something. Then their piece would be sent to the next participant, who would create something, and then their piece would be sent on and so forth, until everyone has created something. This event is still underway, but the results are sure to be great.
That second event is run by our very own podcast overlord, Eslo Spirit, being the ZU Creative Corner Art and Creativity Show, in which participants, much like in a writing contest, submitted pieces around a central theme. However, unlike a traditional writing contest, there was no judging, and artists could submit in any format they saw fit. Ultimately, the show saw 5 wonderful submissions and was quite popular with readers and viewers. While no follow-up has been explicitly announced, Eslo has expressed the possibility, so if you want to see another, be sure to let them know. As always, more info on both this event and Thousand Sunnies can be found in dedicated Creative Corner threads.
Finally, we come to our last several news points, mostly on what's been going on with more specific members on the site. First up, we've seen a great number of recent veteran members returning to the site, including Shell, Scarlet Raven, Big Bro Davida, Prada, Powershot, Chica Chica, Offals, and Andros. If you're a new member looking to learn about some ZU history, or an old member looking to reconnect, now's a great opportunity.
Just don't cause any trouble, please.
Or, I mean, hypothetically, you could.
You too. Anyway, additionally, we've had a good number of name changes for regular members recently. Lady Sunshine is now Lady Duneshins, Darklake Reigns is now Adjustment, Spinel is now Thousand Sunny, and TrueAge 67, TurboGrafx 16, and, well, me, Realmwings, have all undergone name shortenings, changing to True, Turbo, and Realm, respectively. Furthermore, Dana has unshreked itself. I refuse to comment on this further.
We've had two ZUers of the month since last episode, so we'll be honoring both. First off, in May, the ZUer of the month was Clampy Girl. Having only joined last October, along with her addition to ZU's Columns team, Clampy has already become a beloved part of the ZU Form community. Gracing us regularly with her amazing art in her Creative Corner thread. Clearly, a lot of other members like her quite a bit as well, as they had very nice things to say. John Sandwich said of Clampy, Clamp, not only are you a new Mafia player, but you are in fact a phenomenal one as well. It is always a pleasure speaking with you and playing community games with you. You are an amazing artist as well. I'm awful at these types of things, but I do want to say that I appreciate your presence here on the forum. Your breath of fresh air in this sometimes old and hollow place. Hope to see you and your art around more often. Cheers! JP the typo said of Clampy. Congrats, Clampy. If nobody knew you were a noob, everyone wouldn't assume you've been here for years. You become an easily recognizable part of this community and even graced us with cool art and an awesome personality. Congratulations, Clampy Girl, and we wish you the best for your future on the site.
June's ZUer of the month was Aurora, previously known as Medley's Harp. Also having joined in October of 2019, Aurora has quickly become known across ZU, being an adopter in Newbie Central, an active forum gamer, occasional Mafia player, and writer in the Creative Corner with a highly successful series about waffles? You'll have to read it for yourself to find out. Regardless of the contents of those stories, however, ZU members have a lot of kind words for Aurora. Turbo said, Yay, congrats, Harp. You're seriously one of the nicest people on ZU and one of my best and first friends. Your writing thread's amazing, and so is your art. I could spend hours talking about how nice and thoughtful you are, but that would take way too long. Either way, I hope you enjoy this month, because you definitely deserve it. And, well, this one is mine, but since Aurora is a very close friend of mine, I figured I would read it too. Aurora, there are far too many things that I want to say to you that I could possibly put as succinctly as I think I should. You've only been on the forums for about 8 months, which, relatively, is still some time, but you've already become a well-known and well-loved member of the community, and for good reason. You have a wonderful personality and are one of the nicest people I'm sure any of us has been lucky enough to meet. Your positivity, friendliness, and kindness are something everyone can aspire to match. More importantly, though, to me at least, you're one of the best friends I've ever had, not just on ZU, but at all. I feel like I could talk to you about anything, and you've always managed to brighten everyone's day. Every one of the very numerous minutes we spend talking is amazing. Everyone is super lucky that you joined the site. You really deserve this.
And our final piece of news is also related to Aurora? That's right. We have some forum staff changes. Recently, Aurora has been a moderator of Newbie Central, and former mod JP the Typo has returned to modship in General Zelda. We wish both of you the best and are sure you'll do a great job.
Well, that's all the news we got for you today. My name is Realm.
And I am the Zelda Anne.
Thanks for listening.
And as always, if you have something you want us to report here next month, be it related to ZU or to your life offline, send a PM to either myself, Realmwings, or Ezlo Spirit.
Please do, we're so lonely.
Oh dear. Well, anyway, we'll see you next time.
We promise we'll come back faster than last time.
Stay safe, everyone.
Thanks to Realm and Anne for that one. There's actually a great Xenoblade review, speaking of Xenoblade, that's up on the site right now. You can go visit it at ZeldaUniverse.net. I wrote part of it. I wrote it from the point of view of someone who'd played the game before, in terms of the Definitive Edition, and then someone else wrote, Zach from our features team, wrote from the perspective of someone who'd never played Xenoblade before. So if you're interested in that, go check it out on the website.
Yes, Xenoblade Chronicles, the hit RPG, the best RPG to ever come out. Please go play Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition for the Nintendo Switch. You can find it at a retailer near you. Xenoblade Chronicles, the second best video game series of all time, right behind Zelda and a very close second. Xenoblade Chronicles, please play it. I'm desperate. We need more fans. I want Xenoblade Chronicles X to be ported now.
Do you mean Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition available now for the Nintendo Switch?
Yep, Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition available now for the Nintendo Switch.
Great, well, speaking of Zelda...
Yeah, did you know we have a website?
Yeah, the ZeldaUniverse.net. You can visit it today for all of your Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition news and updates and reviews. So, great place for everything to do with Xenoblade.
When did we get a website?
Well, around the year 2001, which was about before you were born. It was BP.
Before Peyton. That's right. That's how history works. How am I just now hearing about this website? I've been on ZU staff for a little under 3 years now, and I'm just now hearing about this website?
Well, you wouldn't be alone, Peyton. There are people out there just like you listening to this podcast. We picked up this podcast from just like iTunes or something, and they've just been listening to it as the Zelda podcast, and they don't visit us over at ZeldaUniverse.net, and I think that's sad. Also worth mentioning, congratulations to our ZUers of the month. Clampy Girl, who got the May ZUer of the Month award, actually started as Zelda Universe staff and then joined the forums, and has really fit right in enough that they've given her an award, so congratulations there. I wish we had some actual Zelda news, but unfortunately E3 was cancelled this year, so haven't heard much. We can only hope that the next Zelda game, Breath of the Wild 2, which should hopefully release sometime within the next year, presumably, is going to be coming up soon, that we're going to hear something soon. So if we do, we'll definitely let you know. We'll let you know on the podcast, but if you want to know before that, you can of course go to ZeldaUniverse.net. Next up, we have Kelly, our editor, with her first segment, which is a theory about the Happy Mask Salesman.
Thanks, guys. Hi, everyone. As Cody and Peyton had mentioned, I'm Kelly, the editor, and this is my first segment that I've done for the podcast. Please enjoy. I want to start this segment by saying this is all speculation and theories. Nothing has been confirmed. I want to take you to Icona Canyon, the cursed land where the Icona Kingdom once existed, the home of the dead and filled with revengeful spirits. A land described by the Poe Collector as stained with a history of darkness, drenched in blood. In ancient times, this land was plunged into a brutal war. Imagine a small child of the Icona royal family who was never happy and fearful of the ever-growing war that plagued his homeland. Imagine that child, desperate for a way out, searched through thousands and thousands of books from the royal family library, only to find one that could solve all of his problems. Majora's Mask. It is an accursed item from legend that is said to have been used by an ancient tribe in its hexing rituals. It is said that an evil and wicked power is bestowed upon the one who wears that mask. According to legend, the troubles caused by Majora's Mask were so great, the Ancient Ones, fearing such catastrophe, sealed the mask in shadow forever, preventing its misuse. Majora's Mask is a source of Terminus tragedies. When Link finally reaches the moon, he finds this evil artifact strapped to the face of a child, sitting all alone. This child has no one to play with, but this isn't just any child. It's a young version of the Happy Mask Salesman. Why do I believe this is? I believe the Happy Mask Salesman was a member of the Icona royal family. Consider his purple clothing. It's the color of royalty. He also wears large golden jewelry, including a necklace and wrist cuffs. This is noteworthy, considering jewelry isn't exactly super common in the Zelda world. Look closely at his large backpack and you'll notice he carries a mask whose face is completely identical to the face that is on the mirror shield. And where does Link acquire the mirror shield? In the Stone Tower Temple of Icona. While his family spent their time dealing with the war, the young prince was left alone. He would have felt powerless and isolated with no one to talk to. Perhaps his only friends were the masks that adorned his room, the bodiless, unmoving friends who served as the lone source of his happiness. Perhaps a desire to change his fortunes led him to uncover the family secret. With access to royal records, the prince could have discovered the truth about the Ancient Ones who sealed away Majora's Mask. It's possible the royal family even are descendants from them. The Happy Mask Salesman himself can teleport, summon an enormous piano from thin air, and vanish before your eyes. Gaining the throne through dark magic would certainly qualify as a history of darkness drenched in blood. Armed with this ancient power, he hoped to turn the tide of the war, but he quickly realized he couldn't control it. Once he understood the severity of the evil powers, he knew he could not keep it in Icona Valley. With only the clothes on his back and the Majora's Mask, he flees Icona Canyon, and eventually, even Termina. As penance for his mistake, he took the burden of keeping the Majora's Mask safe from those with evil hearts, just as his ancestors did. This mysterious man is one of the only people who we know that can travel between Hyrule and Termina. I believe they are connected because of the Lost Woods. The beginning of Majora's Mask involves Link searching in a vast, foggy, wooded area where he gets jumped by Skull Kid. Oddly enough, it looks like the same place the Mask Salesman was jumped as well. Skull Kid, like the prince himself, had been left alone and afraid, with no one to play with after the giants went to sleep. This made him a prime target for the mask's influence. Once the prince reached Hyrule, he set up shop as the Happy Mask Salesman. Maybe he wanted a fresh start. Maybe he needed the money now that he wasn't royalty anymore. Whatever his reasoning, this choice led him to meet Link, the hero of Hyrule. And ultimately, this led to the salvation of Termina. In closing, this was just one way to look at the story of the Happy Mask Salesman. The beauty of Majora's Mask is that it leaves us with more questions than answers. The mysterious nature of the game begs us to fill in the cracks and tell our own stories. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to talk to me, send me something on Twitter. I'm at Kelly the Editor, KellyTheEditor. I'd love to hear your theories or what you think of mine. Now, back to the hosts.
Thanks, Kelly.
That theory seems a little too far-fetched for me. I mean, why wouldn't you trust someone who literally has the word happy in their name?
You know, he's just a very trustworthy guy, I think. There's no suspicious cult, no mysterious man wandering between dimensions with a creepy smile. He's just a happy guy who wants to sell masks, I think. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Now, if we're going to talk real secrets of Termina, do you have any of those that you can think of that might still be lingering in the ether between Nintendo not telling us?
You know, there's a lot of things left unsolved in Termina. It's a very creepy place. It's something that they just go, oh yeah, everyone is a version. They all look like someone from Hyrule. It's just like an alternate dimension to Hyrule. But is it? Like, did it split off from Hyrule at some point? Is it just a parallel world that's been running the whole time and it just happens to have people who look like all of the people in Hyrule? Yeah, look, it's just a mysterious place all around. And what's with that hand in the toilet? You know, all of the big mysteries.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Next up, we have a complete and totally legit history of Zelda. It's starring the one and only Elias X. Thompson, which is not his real middle name.
Yeah, why is there an X there?
It just makes him sound cooler.
Hey, listen up. Listen up, all you listeners. Adding an X to anything makes it sound cooler. Just remember that always as you head into A Fake History of Zelda.
And now for an installment of Fake Zelda History with Elias Thompson. During the development of Majora's Mask, Eiji Aonuma took game design inspiration from a phenomenon akin to Bill Murray's Groundhog Day, wherein Aonuma-san experienced the same 3 days over and over again. In subsequent developer interviews, he described the experience as deeply unsettling and a hell that I felt the need to share with the world. When the finished game was presented to Shigeru Miyamoto, the Nintendo legend claimed that, while he wouldn't wish anyone to play the game, they had deadlines to meet, and so Majora's Mask was released to the general public, somehow to critical acclaim. This has been Fake Zelda History with Elias Thompson.
Thanks for the great segment, Elias. If only any of it were true.
Why does Elias do this to us? Like, consistently?
Look, it's a very important job here at Zelda Universe to have someone that creates a intriguing podcast segment.
This is how the timeline gets messed up. We don't mess with the timeline, Cody.
I don't know. I think, actually, Majora's Mask is all about messing with the timeline.
Oh, God. We're not going into this right now. That's a story for future segments. Which, by the way...
Who wants to talk about the timeline for an hour and a half? It's our new segment.
No, it's not happening.
Timelines with Peyton and Cody.
We're not doing this. We are not doing a full timeline podcast. However, we will be doing future Majora's Mask segments in order to help celebrate a little bit more on our 20th anniversary of Majora's Mask. So... stay tuned for some of those.
Next time on the podcast, we're all done for the moment, except for a couple of segments that you should enjoy very much. There's, of course, everyone's favorite segment, the credits, where we credit people. It's very important that you listen to it, and then that you're thankful while you're listening to it, that you listen to it, and each time a name comes up, you say, thank you. Thank you for making this great show. It's sort of a colon response starring Eden, so... be sure to stick around for that one. And then the bit at the end that everyone loves, the bloopers, which we do have a few of this time around.
Yep, I have a feeling it'll be mostly starring us, but it should be pretty good.
Well, this has been Cody and Peyton, aka Emperor Penguin, and...
nope, that's not what the P stands for.
You did get it from... so this, I don't think, making it into the show, but he did tell me that Club Penguin is where he debuted... his Emperor P username, and I'm pretty sure it stands for Emperor Penguin.
Nope, it stands for Emperor Peyton, but the P is subjective.
The P is subjective, that's so true. Well, think about that, and we'll see you again next time.
You've met with a terrible fate, haven't you? It's true. This is the end of the episode. There's definitely no content after this. We made sure the bloopers didn't happen during this cycle. Right? Let's see, what other Majora's Mask references can I make here? What? Credits? Oh yeah. Yeah, let's do that. For better or for worse, your hosts this episode were Cody Davies and Peyton Garrett. Mind-blowing combination. Brian Thomas graced us with a personal edition of Hey Listen, telling us about his relationship with Majora's Mask over the years. The game, not the object. He's not a mask salesman, I think. Shona Johnson listed off 5 weird things in Majora's Mask. There's way more than 5, but that could be its own podcast episode. The Zelda Anne and Realm Wings, or just Realm, or whatever he's calling himself these days, returned for some community news. Kelly Timmerman, our favorite head editor and fan favorite host, presented her first ever segment, in which she had a theory. Special thanks to Elias Thompson for contributing a fake History of Zelda segment that showed up in our segments folder out of the blue. Pretty sure there's a creepypasta in there somewhere.
You shouldn't have done that.
I'm the executive producer, and my name is Eden Biskin. Sure, I'll stand by that order. Cody Davies is our consulting producer, and his name is Richard. As I also mentioned before, Kelly Timmerman is our head editor. I would like to offer a special welcome to Andy Bundy, our new assistant editor, who edited the community news this episode. Mary Stowe and Pietro Bucci publicly relate. There are PR peeps, is what I'm getting at. Our technical advisor is Joshua Lindquist, who also makes up a third of our ongoing ad hoc graphics team, which also includes Realm and Peyton Garrett. The ZUcast is a production of the ZUBC, a division of Zelda Universe. If you aren't subscribed to ZUcast, you should remedy that. You can subscribe to us through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and/or Spotify, or in your favorite alternative podcatcher through our RSS feed at zeldauniverse.net/feeds/podcast. Tell us what you thought of this or any other ZUcast episode via email, podcast@zeldauniverse.net, via the Zelda Universe forums and the ZUcast Hub 2020 thread in Community Central, and or via ZU's social media. Our social media goes like this. At Zelda Universe on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and Zelda Universe TV on YouTube and Twitch. I'm not even going to say anything about how empty our inboxes have been lately. Oh, wait. We hope you've enjoyed our Majora's Mask 20th anniversary episode. The good news is, you don't need an Ocarina of Time in order to listen to it again and again. See what I did there? You'll hear from us again soon. Not 3 days soon, but referenced. Stay healthy, everyone.
Alright, so let's go in 3, 2, 1. That was good counting and clapping. I think we're done here. Time to go to sleep.
Wait. No, Cody, we're supposed to host the podcast.
Yeah, I'll think about it.
A land described by the Poe Collector as stained with a history of darkness, drenched in blood. In ancient times, this land was purged into a...
Blah, 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 blah. Ooh, I want some juice. Ooh, I forgot that I had juice right here. Capri Sun, yum.
You've met with a terrible fate, haven't you? It's true. This is the end of the...
3, 2, 1. Hello, every... No.
3, 2, no.
So sorry to whoever's going to be going through this. There's going to be a few mess-ups.
Majora's Mask. It is a cursed item from legend that is said to have been used by the ancient tribe in...
I would like to offer
We did the clap thing, right?
All right. 3, 2, 1. Thanks, Shona.
Oh, that's me. Whoopsie.
Great, I've won for the bloopers already.
Battle over the eternal question within the Zelda theorizing.
Theorizing is an awful theoring. Word.
Theoring. Yeah, well, I made a new word, theoring. Oh.
This mysterious man is one...
Oh, this recording is like the best. Oh, I love it. Okay.
You know what? I'm going to keep rolling with this.
Or simply an illusion. Many, like Exofert. Is that supposed to be Echofert or Exofert?
Well, you're already called Emperor P, which is some sort of Club Penguin username, so you can only go up from here.
You know, the irony is, I think Club Penguin was actually the first website where I started using the Emperor P handle instead of my old one.
Wow. Do you know what username I went by on Habbo Hotel?
Magic Cody?
Codemaster D.
Oh, Codemaster D. Wow.
Yay! More bloopers!
Once the prince reached Hyrule...
Now it's that time of the show where we look at some of the threads around the site that have captured the interest of our users. Wow. This paragraph is the one that's getting me.
We were so close and then my typo ruined it.
It's okay.
Next up is our editor, Kelly, with her first segment on the history of the Happy Past Salesman. You know, don't you love the Happy Past Salesman?
Mary Stowe and Pietro Bucci publicly relate.
Additionally, there are two new Creative Corner events, one of which is currently underway and one of which has concluded but may return in the future. This first event is the Creative Corned?
Wait, where is it?
Right here. This first event is the Creative Corned telephone game.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, was that supposed to be corner? We're going to eat some corn while we're being creative.
I think they do allow cooking. That would be a good prompt.
Whatever his reasoning, his... Whatever this...
Now it's time. Wait.
Juno's Zewer of the Month was Aurora, previously known as Medley's Harp. Also, no.
Did I do that right?
Yeah, it was fine. You got Shell right, which oh. Most people don't, actually.
Oh, I did?
Yes.
I
I was so scared with this paragraph, not gonna lie.
Once the prince reached Hyrule. Once. Come on.
Hi, my name is Peyton Garrett. I go by Emperor P on the internet, and I am 12 years old.